Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens, I'm a business marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. Today, we have almost 5,000 participants across the world. If, though, this is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. If you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's good to have you along again. Every profession needs its heroes, the people who have the courage to challenge convention, drive outstanding achievement, and give our discipline a noble name. In this episode, we'll be speaking in depth to one such hero, learn about what they do, how they've got here, and a bit about what's made them who they are today. I'm delighted to be joined today by the author of Boring to Brave, Mark Schwakey. Mark, welcome to our podcast.
Thanks, Dave. Delighted to be here.
So good to have you here. So I can see you over Zoom, and there's some rather impressive guitars hung on the wall behind you. So for the benefit of our listeners, where do we find you today?
I'm at home in the place that I got cornered into in my house by my six-year-old daughter, who decided she no longer wanted this tiny box room as a bedroom, and fair enough. So she moved bedrooms, and this became my office. And I annoyed everybody by making it the most wonderful room in the house to be in. And just before Christmas, because I'm looking for a job and sort of in between jobs and promoting myself for consultancy and all that stuff, I've been on a really, really kind of quick fire content release. So I've been putting stuff on LinkedIn. And just before Christmas, I couldn't think of that week's content. So I took some photos of my office and sort of put numbers by some of the pictures on the wall and gave people a little tour around the room that I've built over the previous weeks. And I've got a ton of, some of our B2B marketing colleagues, Dave, are mad old musicians. They came out the woodwork going, I'm a drummer, I'm a keyboardist. Oh my God, I love your guitar. We should all get together for a jam. So
B2B marketing band is on the way, I feel sure.
We might be like a B2B marketing supergroup full of very old people.
Very, very cool. I'm happy to have a go at singing, although I'm not sure I'd do you I'd do you any favours at all.
All welcome.
So, great to see you. You're author of Boring to Brave. Tell us what that's all about.
I will do. Do you know what? It was funny. In 2020, the first lockdown hit, and without wishing to make the podcast too personal or maudlin, because it, you know, I'm including it because it is part of the story. My father, we lost my father halfway through that year to cancer, and we weren't victims of COVID. We were among many people who found hardship in not being able to get near medicine, not being able to get near treatment. My dad was isolating, and he couldn't get to the hospital. And when he wasn't allowed into the hospital, we weren't allowed to go see him. It was a really tough year. I also found myself that year having just wound up the agency I had founded with a business colleague and friend of mine. We'd done something called Rebel Tech for 3 or 4 years. We'd done B2B PR and marketing. And we were a small agency, but it was great fun. We had clients in the States, in Europe, in APAC. We were doing really well, but when Brexit met pandemic and got married at the start of that year, all of our clients started rushing for the hills. I remember being marketing week editor and hearing from the big agency heads, even the big ones, WPP, you know, Omnicom, all those guys used to say, we might look successful, but we're only ever 3 calls away from folding. 3 calls in the same week from folding. And that's what happened to us. Our clients just literally started phoning it in going, I'm really sorry, there's no more money. So I was looking for something to do whilst trying to figure out how I could best support mum and dad who live up north in Liverpool. And I was doing some consultancy then. I've become expert at filling in time between roles. And one of the things that became apparent was as I started sort of selling myself in as either a strategist or a campaigner or somebody who could help tactically or somebody could help educate, was I've got a very, very strong view on B2B marketing, on how we do it and how it gets done and what it could be and what it is when it's amazing. And it came down to a series of thoughts that I started penning and putting into a book and trying to put into a structure. And I spent that summer, my children missed me, but I spent most of my evenings that year trying to figure out exactly how I could make it useful to your community and mine. And it comes down to basically the thought that an absence of bravery or risk means so much of B2B marketing just isn't worth the money paid for it. And it's unhealthy. It's unhealthy for our companies to be paying for B2B marketing that doesn't stand out, doesn't appeal, doesn't capture the heart, doesn't capture the mind, doesn't even look different from your competitor. But it's also really quite stifling for yourself. It's quite a tragedy to be spending so much time, so skilled and knowing so much, and not creating work that actually interests you or turns you on, and to be constantly fighting a short-term battle with sales and a short-term battle with management and all the different challenges we have to go through. So it was kind of part manifesto, part gutsy little manifesto, fighting the good fight, part how to, because let's face it, it's not going to be easy, but there's going to be some conversations you're going to need to have, and part kind of case study. Here are some really great ways it's been done before. Let's see if we can make B2B marketing 5 or 6 times more powerful than it is now.
And is that largely a kind of creativity call, or are there other aspects to what you would define as brave?
It's a great question. I would say creativity is definitely covered in there, and it's an offshoot. It's a clear it's a clear love child of bravery. There is absolutely no creativity without having first taken the personal choice to be brave.
Yeah.
Bravery first, then creativity. But it's not just creativity. It has to be belief and commitment, and commitment to wanting to do better and understanding how you can. Because without that commitment, and that commitment to craft and commitment to having the argument and the tools to have the argument when it arises, there's just simply no way you can get brave in an organization. Because being brave, you can't be brave on your own. Bravery or being a leader means you need followers, and you need a CFO and a CEO and a COO and the people whose job it is to template things and automate things and, you know, make things in blocks that can be understood and reported. Whereas it's our job really to it's our job to inspire growth, essentially, to generate growth for a company. And in every climate, but especially the one we're in, you can't really generate growth without capturing more inspiring stories, scaling up ambition as well as function, investing not just creativity and craft, but commitment, sometimes breaking rules, sometimes thinking shortly ahead, but some other times thinking far ahead, thinking about marketing as a whole as opposed to, I'm a product marketer, I'm a growth marketer, I'm a performance marketer, I'm a brand marketer. Thinking about the function as a whole and how it works across the company. So there's a lot in the book about how to operate within a company with various colleagues with some really serious names showing or telling how they've done it. So I'm thinking Doug Kessler from Velocity Partners, Rory Sutherland, Scott Brinker of the MarTech crowd, Margaret Molloy, Mark Ritson. I'm talking some really high-powered and successful brains, you know, Anne Handley, who wrote Everybody Writes. So people from the States, people from all over Europe have shared their stories. And in Boring to Brave, I don't know if it will ever be just one book or one pod that really generates the transformation we need. But I think all of these things, yourself included, are a good starting platform.
And is it marketing skill set that is the inhibitor to being brave? Or actually, are there situational
conditions that we find ourselves in the business marketing space that mean that actually there are some hurdles to jump to be able to get there?
I think there's some marketing factors. I think there's some organizational factors, and I think there's some personal factors as well. So some self-realization. I think that if you allow yourself, if you don't think there's a problem, firstly, and you don't mind and you don't care and you're happy to go in and produce whatever you're told, and 9 to 5 is the time when you switch your brain off and your guts and do whatever you need to do to earn your money, that's completely valid, absolutely valid. You're laughing at me as if to say, well, you say that's valid.
Well, I was thinking you probably won't be listening to this podcast if you fall into that category.
That's right.
So I'm hoping we're speaking to the brave amongst our community already.
And there are definitely organisational factors. I mean, there is no way you're walking into any of the, the really, really big B2B success stories of our time, whether you're talking, you know, the aeroplane manufacturers and the, the big tech organisations, and walking in there with a great big paint palette and talking about creativity and getting away with it. You've got the certain... You've got to win fans first. You've got to play the game to a certain extent. You've got to deliver results. You have to know when to absolutely hone in on reporting the right analytics and the right numbers and show that you can do it. Otherwise, you're not going to get listened to. But there's also a self-reflection piece. There's a choosing to play the game that you think B2B marketing has always looked like, or choosing to play the game that you know marketing can. So let me give you a couple of examples. Firstly, we all have been a part of this in the past. I've certainly been a part of this problem where you can turn a clever organization into a stupid one overnight just by following certain requests that, you know, even if you weren't a marketer, you know, as a human being, as sort of the right-brained, curious, creative people we are, we happen to be, if you found yourself in marketing, you know it's just wrong, it's just ridiculous, it doesn't make sense. So for example, I was consulting for a commercial property firm. I was literally an outsider, but because of my skill set that they didn't have elsewhere, by the way, these guys were all VC brilliant, they were backed, they were young, they were hot, they were from America, they were all Harvard and Yale and golden buttons on blue blazers, and really, I mean, they really knew their stuff, but they didn't have a marketing skill set. And I managed to get a kind of permanent contract to be their kind of interim marketing director. And they'd never really done marketing, and they were relying heavily on digital marketing. And because of that, they felt, well, digital marketing equals numbers. You can literally see the numbers. You can see what you put in, you can see what you get out, you can see where it's most effective. Mm. So they'd ask me 2 or 3 times a week for results. And they'd say, we'd have a meeting on a Wednesday morning, like the kind of management meeting, but they'd ask me in between their Wednesdays, like, can you give us a sense of what's happening? And you look into HubSpot and say, it's like, to see what's happening with our ads. And I was like, dude, we had this conversation on Wednesday. Even once a week is way too frequent for me to be wasting your time with numbers. You're going to literally be eating false positives for breakfast and acting upon them. We've set a strategy, we've agreed something, we've understood it, we think it's brilliant and it's right. Let's let it play out and see where it goes. Let's not pick it up on the Thursday and go, well, look at that, we know we're onto something. Or even worse, oh no, that's not working at all. Let's change. They wanted to change 3 or 4 times a month. And I kept telling them, listen, this isn't how it works. Can I have a word with the right people and put your minds at rest? I'm more than happy to. So they'd say, yeah, we get it. We know. Do you know what? It's the people above us that are asking. That's the only reason we're asking. It's like, okay, well, let me talk to them. It's like, no, don't worry. I'll get you out of that conversation, Mark. But if you could just pass this data up. So suddenly you get to the point where you're a consultant trying to do your best job. You're passing dumb data up an organization, feeding dumbness to the top, to enable them to make dumb decisions that come back down the ladder. And suddenly you've gone from being an extraordinary, outstanding business to a stupid one overnight. And you're part of the game. Mm. So that means that if you are a marketer, let's say a growth marketer, and you understand that looking too frequently or looking too soon at 10 or 15 different A-B tests that are ongoing is going to risk giving you a false positive. You've got to be the one that says, do you know what? I'm not just a marketing person because I know how to press go on Google Ads. I'm a marketing person because I understand data science. I understand a bit of marketing science. I understand a bit of psychology and everything. What that means is I know how to manage this. So as hungry and as keen as you are to get the insights that Google says are instant, you've got to just pace it. You go and do finance and you go and do operations. You go and do client account holding and everything else. And let's set a date for me to come and give you some proper results by which we might form a really solid, powerful, coherent strategy. You've got to be the one. And if you are just willing for an easy life or because somebody doesn't like you or whatever, to go into the meeting and give them the details and the reports and have the CFO giving his or her time to data, which you know is just not solid. It's you're basically, you know, you're kind of, you're not just damaging your business potentially or damaging your own reputation. You're also damaging the position and reputation of marketing. And that's what I want to change. Yeah. I want us all to get better and braver so that marketing as a B2B, and I believe it is, I believe this is happening, but let's keep it going so that B2B marketing is elevated in everybody's minds within the organization.
That, I mean, that sounds like a superb mission and one I would very much hold to my heart as well. I'm intrigued though, in what you talked about there, you mentioned at one point that you are our former editor of Marketing Week. And I love Marketing Week with the best of them, but I would say it's never struck me as being much of a business marketing journal. Its focus has been very much more on B2C rather than B2B. And that's fine. There are lots of other types of marketing available. But that suggests to me that there was kind of a turning point in your career, Mark, that gets us to a point where we're talking today. So I wonder, can you perhaps take us through perhaps some of the key steps on your career journey? And perhaps point up to things that people listening to this, if they're starting out their career, might want to emulate. But tell us a bit about how you got to be talking to us today.
So listeners, the first thing I can tell you is if you're listening out for anything you can emulate, wind on 5 minutes now, you're not going to find anything. Secondly, before I answer your question, Dave, one of the beautiful things about writing a book is you get to do all these great mea culpas. So you get to look over all the mistakes you've made, gather them into one sort of almost confessional chapter and get it all off the chest and get it out there. And
one is there a volume on Marketing Week? Yeah, is this what you're leading up to?
Well, there's a fair bit because, and you know, the other thing about being confessional and making a mea culpa and making the book a bit personal, there are some personal stories in there. Is that people believe you and want to believe you and want to listen. The more personal you make it and the more honest you make it, so the more you're able to say, this was where I actually screwed up in my career, or I could have done better, the more fans you get. And one of the things about bravery in the book is just being honest and being real. So the mea culpa I'll bring in now is when I was Marketing Week editor between 2009 and 2012, I was rubbish at B2B marketing. I didn't know anything. In fact, none of my people really knew. We never wrote about the stuff that keeps marketing going under the bonnet all time. That we never did about A-B testing. We never did about data science. We never did about marketing technology, really. And it was a crime. And we didn't know enough. We were all young. And my rather too pithy answer when anyone stood up at a conference and said, why don't you do more on B2B marketing, was it was lazy, my answer. It was, listen, all marketing is marketing and people would rather read about Domino's and Nike than, you know. And so my B2B clients, because that's what they were, they couldn't get in the pages. They used to be the clients and the advertisers. Yeah. And that's not good enough. Nowadays, Russell Parsons, who's the editor there, who worked with me at the time, does do occasionally. I understand from something he posted that this week he's going to do some stuff about B2B hiring. I haven't seen it because I'm not a subscriber, Russ. Could you sort that out for me, please, mate? Back before Christmas, Russell did a week on on B2B hiring. So I understand that was in the piece, and he tries to do a lot more than we did in the time, which we should give him credit for. But yeah, there's not there wasn't. I thought I was going to be. If you asked me where I was going to go as a marketer once I decided to leave journalism and become a marketer and do the thing I'd always been writing about, I would have suggested to you that one day I'm going to be a marketing manager or director, hopefully for Coca-Cola, something like that. I thought I was going to be a classic B2C marketer.
Yeah.
Two or three things happened. One was I wrote to Coca-Cola because I knew them all in Atlanta. I knew the management team in Atlanta and the chief exec. I'd spent some time with him, Muhtar Kent at the time. And I knew his strategy team and his senior exec team. And I wrote to them and said, guys, why wouldn't you hire me? I'm just going to give you a minute to process that. I wrote to them and said, why wouldn't you hire me? And two things happened. One of them wrote back, I think the SVP for marketing wrote back and said, Mark, we love you, but go and get your ass kicked in agencies for 2 or 3 years before you even think about coming to us for a job. I thought that was fair, so I did. And the other thing that happened was one of the British executives immediately called me and took me out for a coffee and said, Mark, what are you doing writing to my boss's boss asking for a job? And I was like, well, I guess I come from a place where, you know, you don't ask, you don't get unless you ask. And she said, Mark, you would hate it at Coca-Cola. I said, really? She said, you would hate it. It's not Olympics and music and sponsorships and coolness and the brand. When you work for Coca-Cola, you're sat in an office, five offices away from the decision maker, and you're kept in a box to do what you're doing. You are someone that needs to be able to influence across a board. You don't get to jump from project to project and influence strategy. You'll be some digital marketing manager and you'll be on social only and you'll hate it. So it gave me cause to think. So I went to agencies for a while and worked with, again, mostly B2C brands, Weetabix, SAB Miller, the beer company, Experian, which obviously is a B2B company as well. And agencies was a largely dissatisfying experience. It wasn't awfully, you know, you're doing a lot of selling, not the same with the burying of partners potentially, but, you know, you're doing a lot of selling to win. And then once you do win, you just move on to sell to win to somebody else rather than actually solving problems for a brand. And you know, I wasn't in a position to be an account holder. I was, because I'd come from Marketing Week and had a black book, I was seen very much as a rainmaker, and that didn't really necessarily suit what I wanted to learn. And suddenly I got an opportunity from a guy who I'd worked with when I was at Marketing Week, when he'd been at Google. He'd broken away with three other Googlers to form a growing company called Qubit. And there was four of them. And they were 50 people when I joined. And I've joined as global communications director. And 2.5 years later, we were sort of 300 people across the world. And I was in New York for a week, a month. But do you know what it was? It was, I was learning stuff I'd never heard before. I went in there saying, I know nothing about what you guys are doing, and I need to, but I can bring something you don't have, which is the storytelling and the vision and the how to really go to market. If you're selling to marketeers, I know these guys, so maybe I can help. In return, they taught me everything. I mean, the learning curve was just delicious. It was absolutely gorgeous. It was every week I was with people at times half my age, but able to work so much quicker on stuff that I wish I'd known 10 years earlier. And so that was a real eye-opener for me. It was like, this is the stuff that drives and fuels customer experience that I know and I'm used to and would expect. This is the stuff that actually does it. This is the stuff that, you know, all the different parts of a retail purchase journey now. Let's say you end today with a new pair of trainers, Dave, but you start the day with no idea. So you do the search online, you might be stopping for a coffee with a mate at lunchtime and pass a couple of stores and take a couple of QR codes or labels and then go on your mobile while you're on the train home, and you know the trainers are there to pick up at nearest click and collect a couple of days later, you know, all of that stuff. And it's like, wow, this is how they work. So I used to go back to my brand, B2C marketing directors and commercial directors and all the people that used to flirt with me when I was marketing week editor and say, listen, there's something going on here we should talk about. And so it was a really happy marriage of stuff I could add value to and a huge learning curve every day, which hasn't actually ever gone away. I'm not technical, by the way. I'm not particularly technical. I'm the person that has to ask dozens and dozens and dozens of questions to the point where product and engineer guys, once they've got past the fact that they hate marketing and I'm still there asking them questions, they go, look, it's gone past, you know, you've worn out your license, but you're going to need to take me out for lunch or take me out for a beer. It's like, we're delighted to, you know. And so it takes me asking the same question 17 times of a deep, dark tech data guy to really get what we're talking about and then be able to turn it into a story. So I get to learn the whole time. In fact, I think that there's something in the book I remember writing, I can't think what chapter it's a part of, that says, you are never more powerful as a B2B marketer than you are in your enthusiastic, excited, ready to get going first 6 weeks, where you are asking all the questions and you're fueled by, give me more, give me fire hose of knowledge and let me process and filter and figure out what I understand and what I don't, what I can do with. And people love you for that, because that what they hear is, well, hang on, I get to validate my role to this new guy and add my perspective and my history. I also get to tell them what's working, but also what's not working, in the hope that we're all old and legacy now. We've been here for 6 months or 3 years or whatever, and we all know what doesn't work. It just doesn't seem to be anybody's job to fix it, but maybe this guy's the one. And you come away with like 6 months worth of really big problems with the organization, that some of them might be communication, some of them might be relationships, some of them might be product. So, but you've logged all these problems. And imagine if you spent your first year just fixing those and being the go-to guy that changes things, and how grateful everybody would be and how effective you can become by not being a part of the furniture too soon, not becoming, everyone wants you to be a quick study these guys these days, like a really quick learner. I would suggest don't be too quick a learner, because for as long as you are still asking those ridiculously easy fundamental questions or having to ask the data guy six times what he or she means by something, you know, your eyes on, and it's really very powerful.
You're very modest, because you kind of started off that your answer to my question here of, I'm not sure there are many things that people can emulate. Well, you ended your story with at least one of them, you know, and I think your enthusiasm for your topic, Mark, comes across really, really well. So it's great to hear. Just before Christmas, you were writing very enthusiastically on the subject of customer loyalty. And I wonder, therefore, if you could tell us a bit more about how we should be doing customer loyalty in B2B today.
Yeah, customer loyalty in B2B is a funny one. I was actually doing quite a lot of talking about customer loyalty around the, and I was thinking B2C customer loyalty at the time, around a sort of Black Friday and holiday season. And I think Emarsys had brought out a new paper on what loyalty looks like in the B2C world. And I think it's relevant if you look at, if you then sort of look at the kind of the shape and the shell of that and turn it into your, you know, put your B2B glasses on. What this customer loyalty index that Emarsys was had published, I think it was its second time it published, was that loyalty hasn't gone away, but it had evolved. And that, you know, at the time we were just hearing for the first time that this perfect storm of high inflation, high interest rates, mortgages going through the roof, taxes coming up now to bite us on the bum, energy bills, price of goods, price of living. And it just seemed like, where can I turn this? I mean, everything is happening at once. And so, and I think more and more people were feeling like, listen, even for the brands I feel most loyalty, I just can't afford to be brand loyal anymore. And so we have to make our retailers, our vendors, if you like, our retailers and products and brands work much harder. And loyalty is still there, but you're going to have to do more. You're going to have to listen harder and really tune into how I feel. You're going to have to understand that I'm in the market, not for a great, easy relationship that you know you can rely on, but I want personalized discounts, incentives, rewards. I want deals. I'm in the market for you sharing my values. And if you don't, I can do 20 seconds research and go elsewhere. So, and all it was really was, you know, I think the Marcus's line was, you've already been customer centric. Now you have to get customer obsessed. And that's what loyalty is in B2B as well. So there's a thing, isn't there, where, you know, in B2B, what we love to do, our favorite slide of all time in any presentation is all the logos we've got. Here is the company we keep, you know. And, you know, we've all got them on there. We've all got the same brands on there, you know. And those brands never knowingly appear on all of our slides. They may be our customers. They may be our once former customers. They might be our customers for a whole chunk of our B2B technology suite, or they might just have bought 20 quid's worth off us once, right? Do you know what? We can't assume anything. Businesses are under the cosh every bit as much as households are. They're going to be watching every pound of spend. They're going to be finding reasons not to renew. They're going to be finding reasons not to to buy from us, not to expand. Even if you think you present wonderful ROI and, you know, you've got a times six or a 10 times eight or a times 10 on your slides, doesn't matter. They're going to be looking for an instant return, something that's not going to get them sacked, right? Something that's not going to get them into hot water when they go and present to their internal team. And so customer loyalty means absolutely every single thing it does in B2C, in B2B. You need to think about how to make that person look good, feel good, be reassured. You need to think about personalized offers, whether that's deals and incentives, rewards. I don't know how that works. It might be, you know, we can raise your profile through case studies, or it might mean we can give you money off for the first 3 months or an early break clause or whatever. You need to think about values. You need, you know, one of the things that I spoke to Margaret Molloy of Siegel and Gale in New York for the book, she had this really, really fab line on, how did she put it? She put it, you know, brand didn't need to be a thing in B2B. For as long as you were buying £1 million worth of Hadoop or something like that, an infrastructure piece, and putting it in and then spending 5 years trying to figure out how to get the most out of it and understanding that only two or three people really understand it and blah, blah, blah. And it's a problem. You don't do that anymore. Everything's on a license. Everything's on a sort of software as a service license.
Yeah.
It's that easy actually to switch out and switch in, you know, especially if you contracts, if you've negotiated a contract that doesn't commit you to a certain amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
So actually brand really matters, because with everybody boasting the same or similar features and functions and tech vendors getting ahead of themselves and often selling something before they've actually got it or made it, it's often brand and values and attitude and approach and a personality. Yeah, so brand suddenly becomes really, really important. And I'm talking not just about how cool your brand looks or feels or your colors or your, you know, I'm talking about the way you make your customers feel. If your customers spend money with you once, simply don't hear from you for the next 6 weeks after you've, you know, after you've implemented the line of code or whatever, or they've got a problem, they're not ready to quit yet, but you know, they're not seeing the returns you've kind of talked about or predicted. And that's not a massive problem in itself. What is a problem is I have to keep going into see my boss once a week and reporting, and I'm not enjoying giving the number, you know, supporting people. You know, that's part of the brand for me. That's the relationships you have and the partnerships you have and the way you show up to work. This is partly what I mean by being brave. When you show up to work, the way you stand up to be counted, the way you take pride in the customer relationships, the way you, listen, I sold to you, you bought me, you trusted me, I'm here for you. You tell me what we need to do to make this work. And, you know, I think people perceive loyalty in different ways and people perceive brand in different ways. And in B2B, both are, you know, constantly under question and constantly under fire. But I would say that loyalty has a great, you know, God, if you can If you can just dial up 10% of everything, 5% of everything, and that gets you a result where 50% or more of your clients feel more compelled to commit for another year, why would you? And it just takes, it takes a strategy and it takes a conversation inside where everybody understands what they need to do to add to that. And it takes some leadership and some constant review, and it takes some work. But yeah, you've got to do it now. You've got to do it now. You can't rest on your laurels and just accept that, you know, if you can keep new logos ahead of churn, you'll be okay.
Mm-hmm. So we've spoken about your book. I'm after some other recommended reading now. I'd like to know what other, apart from Boring to Brave, what other business marketing book should our listeners be reading and why?
I saw this question and I was it made me laugh every time I looked through your question because I've got a really dirty secret here. I'm useless at reading business books. I know I wrote one, and part of the structure and the process of writing one for myself took this into account. I tried to make it so that I told my mum, because my mum said, I'll buy it. I will definitely buy it.
I'm going to change the question then. I'm going to ask you a different question. I'm going to ask you, what is the secret to getting people like you reading business marketing books?
No, I can read them, but I never get to the end of them.
Oh, finishing them.
I always read the first half and go, okay, I kind of know what your message is and I've seen enough case studies, I get it. And I very rarely get to the end. So I try to tried little tricks, like I call the last chapter, instead of calling it 27, I called it 26 and a half, and just tried a few things to see if I could entice people to get to the end. But one or two I do read, and I think the secret behind getting someone like me to finish a business book is to be, I can't do jargon. I can't read language that sounds like you're basically a droid or a robot. But if you're human enough and you've got something to say and you keep coming up with useful examples, I'll keep it on my desk. Now, I'm holding up for your listeners Anne Handley's Everybody Writes. I've got two books here I want to talk about. One is Anne Handley's Everybody Writes. And this is, and I understand, by the way, there's a new edition. So if you've already read and bought into Anne Handley's Everybody Writes, apparently the new edition, which I haven't got yet, I'm thinking of it as a Christmas or Hanukkah present, my family will groan at. It has loads and loads of new stuff in. But this is basically help after help. It doesn't ever sit on my bookshelf. It doesn't leave my desk. You know, it's literally telling everybody, you might not feel like a writer, you might not think you are, but here are some tips that will make your writing electric. Writing is a habit, not an art. The more the think, the easier the ink. Embrace the ugly first draft. Humor comes on the rewrite. You know, find a writing buddy. Tell the truth. There's real practical, there's hundreds and hundreds of pages, right, of, you know, there's sections writing for Facebook, writing for Twitter. It's really practical. And it's a really cool lesson because she's a really cool woman. The second is, I don't know if you'd call this a business book, but you can vouch for me, Dave, that in this book, I've yellow inked and red inked whole pages of it.
It's definitely a well-thumbed copy.
This is called Hegarty on Advertising, Turning Intelligence into Magic. It's by a guy called John Hegarty, who, if you were in B2C marketing, you definitely know, and in B2B marketing, you might know. He was one of the three gents that invented the agency BBH, that held ridiculously long-term relationships with big brands like Levi's. And he took, he's now considered one of our most creative contributors in the British economy. He's like the godfather of creativity. And if you think creativity is something fluffy or for other people, and you probably wouldn't pick up that book with a barge pole. You can't pick up books with a barge pole. I don't know why I said that. You know, if you weren't going to go near that book, consider it a commercial. I mean, give it half a chance. Consider it a commercial advantage to go in on the Monday after you've finished that book, because it's literally about turning, thinking differently and pushing a bit harder and telling different stories for the sake of driving growth and making more money. And it really is as simple as that. And it's something anyone can do. I could read that book 15 times. I love it.
It's a great recommendation. Thank you very much. If people want to get in touch with you, Mark, what should they do?
Go outside, stand on your doorstep, shout my name extremely loud. At the moment, I don't have my own website. I've got a very, very unupdated, boring to brave website, which I haven't looked at for ages. Simply find me on LinkedIn, Mark Schwakey. Find me on Twitter, at Mark Schwakey. Or simply email me at mchoueke@gmail.com. And I love, one of the things I love the most about being in the marketing tribe, and especially it happens when you're between jobs, because people are ever so kind and intros are a currency, is meeting people. And one of the things I've looked to do in my career, I've been as busy as anyone else in roles where you feel the world falling in and you're constantly on the run. But if anybody, young or old, new or old, of any sort of background at all, asks me for a coffee, I make it a policy to find time in the diary and say yes, because you never know what you're going to hear. And also, that was done for me dozens of times as when I was a youngster. So if somebody says to me, you know, here's what I do, here's where I'm at, I heard about you, I'd love to get a coffee and just share some ideas. And I try and make it a policy to never say no, because inevitably they'll open up a new thought or a new idea, and you'll be paid back in spades just by hearing somebody and seeing where you can overlap and seeing where you you come together and seeing where you don't and hearing somebody else's tale. So yeah, I do encourage people to get in touch.
So there you go. We've got it on record that the coffees are on you. Mark Schwakey, thank you so much for your time today. It's been great talking.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Dave.
And that's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guest, Mark Schwakey. And thanks to our technical person, Alicia Gratian. Thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can, and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from. Just go to businessmarketingclub.org.uk.